Normally, we had a network problem. It was taking long to admit people. I'm not sure whether everybody has been admitted already. Can I check if the legal aid board has been admitted?
Thank you, Chair. I am quickly checking. My name is Mantiti. I'm quickly checking if the other members are connected. I can see the deputy chairperson is there. AC chair is there. Our chief legal executive is there.
Good morning, CEO. Good morning, Chair.
Morning, morning.
Thanks. I see that the chairman is there. Brian is there, CEO. So I think probably the only one person that I'm not seeing is Matume. I don't think he's coming. So I think the delegation of legal aid is all there. The chairman is online. I see his name there. So just to add to what you were saying to the committee, I think we're all here.
So is the judge online?
Yes, the judge is online, Chair.
Oh, thank you very
I'm
much.
sure that he will greet very soon. Probably he's still connecting to also unmute and so forth, but I'm sure that he will lead the delegation from here.
Okay, thank you very much. To the members of the Portfolio Committee, good morning. Sorry for the glitch. There was a problem with IT. I'm not sure whether there are still other members who have not logged in. Can I check with the leaders of various political parties?
Morning, Chairperson Wilma.
Morning. Morning, morning, Honorable Nipot Trachan. Thank you very much. I see the DA is not yet in, or Honorable Verma Horn is in.
Yes, morning, Chair.
Morning, morning, how are you?
No, I'm fine, thank you. I was also struggling, but I'm in, thanks.
Thank you very much. Is Honorable Breckenbach coming today?
She is Chair. I did speak to her just before the meeting, so she might have had the same struggles. I'll try and connect, I'll try and contact her.
Okay, thank you very much. I know Honorable Jela was also struggling. She phoned me. Oh, she has, I think she has already connected. I think we need to start. Can the committee secretariat fly to the agenda? Thank you very much. Let me start by welcoming the delegation from the Legal Aid Board led by Judge Makume. Welcome, Judge, and to your delegation. Are there any apologies?
Morning, Chair. No, we didn't receive any apologies. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We will today we will be dealing with a presentation by the Legal Aid Board to deal with allegations at an NCA checkpoint episode. This is part of our oversight responsibilities of Parliament to ensure that if there are any issues arising out of the entities reporting to us, we try our level best to attend as soon as possible to the best we can, despite our heavy workload. But we always try to ensure that all our entities are reporting to the department, to the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services. We are always watching, because our aim is to ensure that our people receive the best possible service. So when there are issues of dissatisfaction, as the committee will always try and respond as soon as it is possible. So we received, in fact, members of the Portfolio Committee did watch this episode, and they thought it prudent that the Legal Aid Board must come and explain the allegations that are being made in the episode. We have gone through your presentation. We know that you have circulated a 53-slide presentation. We have gone through the presentation. We will give you 30 minutes to present. That will be followed by questions from members and comments, and the way forward from members. Judge Magume, over to you. Or CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will then afford the Deputy Chair to come in the absence of the judge.
Can you hear me now? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, yes, we can hear you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I was struggling, you know, I'm not this computer, and they have problems. Thank you very much, Chair. I've been listening to you, and I hope the other members are listening to me. Thank you very much. I think the delegation of legal aid is before you. You have said their names, but Chair, I just want to, for you and honorable members of the committee, and recall that on Wednesday I did indicate to you that we as a board, we as the accounting authority, had not as yet discussed this report that is before you. However, we do not have any problems if you have a look at it, but we would like to inform you that when this news came to our attention, we as an executive committee of the board delegated the issue to the Legal Services Committee, which is under the chairmanship of the deputy, Dr. Nkosana Mbunjela, to fast track this issue and place it before the board meeting, which is going to be held on the 27th of February. So it will really be not fair for us to, for the Portfolio Committee to receive a report which the board has not as yet entertained itself. So we were going to ask you whether, if it suits you, Chair, and the honorable members, that discussions on this be regarded as not, it be known that this has not been discussed by the board. That is what I wanted to say to you. However, I want to also tell you that we did not just sit down and do nothing. As I said before, when ENCA informed us that they're going to fly this, the executive committee met urgently and took a decision that the Legal Services Committee must look into the matter, and hence management given instructions to prepare a report which must serve before the board. Thank you. I think Mr. Nkosana Mbunjela would like to add something to that. Nkosana?
Thanks, Judge. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, members of the committee, honorable members of the committee. And we thank you for the speed with which this committee would want to deal with issues that raise their ugly heads about government services that are going to the ordinary people of this country. But as the Chair have said, it is the board that has to actually account to this committee. And to the extent that the committee has, the board has not yet formulated a board's view and processes going forward in line with the policies that we have adopted, which deals with quality and otherwise. It is our humble view that the committee grant us the leeway to have the matter discussed by the board in the coming 2 weeks, and after that we may as well be called upon to come and then engage the committee on the way forward on the matter. The board is taking this matter in the most serious of lights, but we didn't think it is necessary to call an urgent meeting, which was going to be costly, including whereas we are actually having a pending meeting in the same month of February. So we thought it is both financially not prudent for us to call an urgent board meeting to deal with the matter. Since the program has already flighted, we demanded that management must be able to come to us with a review of all these quality policies that has to do with the kind of service we are rendering. And to that effect, Chair, it is our sincere request that the committee consider rescheduling this presentation in order for the board to deal with it. Now, that is the angle I wanted to add, Chair, and thank you so much for giving us opportunity. Indeed, management has prepared that report, but to the extent that the board still has to deal with it, Chair would accept that it becomes difficult for board to sit there and account on this matter when board has not dealt with it, and therefore it might be putting the cart before the horse. Thank you, Chair.
Members, that is the request from the Legal Aid Board. But I think that you will agree with me that when you phoned me, you just indicated that it has not yet served before the board. And however, the management has prepared a detailed response. It was not that explicit that you want a reconsideration of the date that you began. In fact, we changed the date to accommodate the board session. So I took it that you were just reporting that you have seen the report, but it has not yet set before the board. But it was not explicit that you are not, in fact, you request that the meeting be rescheduled.
Yes, Chad, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think, David, I should have actually indicated that to you. But, you know, I was in the middle, and I am in the middle of a very heavy trial that I'm dealing with. So I omitted to say to you that in actual fact, now that I've indicated to you that the board has not discussed, and the board is the accounting authority to you, we should be given an opportunity. I should have specifically said that I thought maybe you thought about that issue, but now that you're here, Chair, I mean, it's in your hands what you want to do with that report. Please just take note that the board has not discussed it. That is all what we want to indicate to you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
If I may just add, Chair, we as a board, we do not want, in fact, that report will indicate to you that we don't tolerate unprofessional conduct in our as regards our legal practitioners. We will be the last organization to cover up on corrupt activities as it has been indicated in that ENCA report. To that extent, you will notice that the steps have been taken against those people that have been doing such unprofessional conduct. And indeed, these legal practitioners are members of the Legal Practice Council. And those issues will be escalated to the Legal Practice Council because professionally, they are members of the law societies and they will be dealt with. So we as a committee, because they are employed, we deal with them in terms of the employment contracts, we hold disciplinary inquiries, and those who are found guilty are dealt with in terms of our code of conduct. So we are not going to make excuses on their behalf. We will not do that as a board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judge McCormick. Honorable Janji, followed by Honorable Breitenbach, and then Honorable Swartz, in that order.
No, just on this issue on the board, on the board's reluctant request or not ready for the meeting. The reasons I think the board is putting forward, I just want to get to that first, Chair. The board is saying to us they could not meet. Maybe before that, the board says it takes this issue very seriously. That's what they say. And having taken this issue very seriously, which is supposed to be out of ordinary, the board did not meet because their next meeting is still in February. And so in their own view, that February meeting, whatever date that is, they must honor that meeting and not convene an extraordinary meeting to deal with an extraordinary issue. And he cites that to do that will be expensive to the board. Now, I don't understand that to start with. Because if your meeting is in February, you could easily have that meeting much earlier. There's an urgent matter of national importance that is brought by Parliament to you, the people that you account to. So you decided that you'd rather come to this meeting and ask us to postpone the matter because the board has not. I find this reason very inexcusable, Chair, because I don't even know what is this expensive nature of this meeting. Why must this meeting be expensive? I mean, in the manner we meet in the last 12 months, in fact, our meetings have become less expensive for that matter. Now, to have a board that takes the matter seriously, but could not translate that seriousness into convening a meeting and be ready when they come to us, it actually, Chair, makes the point I made in another forum that this is exactly what legal aid does. This is what legal aid does to go to court. I mean, I'm in the magistrate commission. Many cases get postponed because legal aid is not ready. Now, practically, we're demonstrating that in this portfolio committee as legal aid. You use seriousness as a word, but it is not aligned to your action. So I therefore, Chair, want to say that I will be in your directive, but from where I'm sitting, we have not been given any compelling reason by the board not to entertain this matter. And in fact, it will help them to listen to this matter because I'm sure we might not conclude this meeting. We might need them to go back. And from what I've read, we might need them to go back and come back to us and tell us more than what they have told us so far. So I'm not buying that apology, not buying that excuse for the board not to have a meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janje. Honorable Glenis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to everybody. I'm sorry I joined a little late. I was having trouble connecting, so I missed some portion of it. So forgive me if I haven't understood correctly. I find myself in the invidious position of having to agree with the Honorable Janje to a degree. I think this matter is important, very important. It has now been aired on national television. Legal Aid South Africa is a very, very important institution, and it has been the crown jewel, really, of the justice cluster in the past, with many centres of excellence. So this is a disappointing approach. I agree with the Honourable Yankee that for this extraordinary circumstance, I would have expected the board to meet. In this day and age where Zoom is available to everybody, it's really not difficult to call a meeting and an urgent meeting. After hours, over the weekend, this matter, I think, deserves that kind of attention. And so I must express my disappointment at the fact that that the board now says they require more time. I think as the body that exercises oversight, we should engage with what we have. And if we have further issues to raise, we can do so with the board, and they can come back at a later stage when we're ready to see them as urgent as possible. But you know, they'll have to perhaps modify their program in order to accommodate. The committee is also very busy. We have made time in a very busy schedule at short notice to deal with this matter because we consider it to be very important. So I'm disappointed that that feeling of urgency has not been reciprocated. I am in your hands, Mr. Chair, and in the hands of the majority, but I must align myself to the comments of the Honourable Janki. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Breitenbach. Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Morning to the judge, morning to Chair and colleagues. I'm in agreement with the sentiments expressed by the previous speakers. I think it's very disappointing that the board hasn't been able to have a virtual meeting already on this very important issue. But I appreciate what the judge indicated, that we should possibly continue with that caveat that the board has not looked at the report yet. I think the legal aid, as previous speakers have indicated, has always set a very, very high standard. And so in this regard, I align myself with Mr. Gianti in particular as to the cost of a meeting. This incident was aired on the 26th of January. We have found time. We are under great pressure to pass very urgent legislation that the President mentioned last night, and we have found time to air this issue, to address this issue. So I do tend to agree with my colleagues that we should consider continuing the meeting, understanding, of course, that the board still needs to consider the whole issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Neville Stratham.
Thank you very much, Chair. I concur with my colleagues, and I agree with them. Chair, I don't like to make things personal, but at the moment I am currently in a lot of pain. Even when the doctor wanted to book me off, I wanted to be in this meeting to hear what you said. So it's not just as a member of parliament, but people in the public are waiting to hear what legal aid is saying about this matter. And I didn't have access to the video, the ENTA video access. I had to find other ways of getting the information of what was said on the video. And I made a way. I had to give it to my interpreters. And they had to send it to me on a different app to make sure that I have access. So I made a plan, even if I'm battling with my health. And the people in the public want to know what's happening. So now I want to, we see what the public are facing. And I think it's the same, you know, not meeting, no documents, all of that. So it must mean that the public is also frustrated. And that frustration is carried over to us. I'm very, very disappointed if this presentation cannot continue and that the board cannot explain to us. A lot has already been said. It's so easy to meet. Zoom is accessible for everyone to meet at one time. And the committee has a heavy program, our committee. We meet day and night, and we can't delay more things any further. So I'm very, very disappointed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mufuke.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I had the same problem with Honourable Breitenbach on being in and out, but I managed to can hear the judge. Chair, I share the sentiments of my colleagues, and I feel that it's very important that we look at this report. The board is here. They should also listen on what is happening, because it has been a lot of effort for us to be going through those pages, and having seen ENCA also episode I'm also in pain. I share what Honorable Nivot is saying, that we need to actually wait for them now to present, and so that we can engage the board, must be able to listen to what is happening. And if they want to respond, they can do that. But for us to allow them to go back, I disagree. The South Africans are waiting. And having read that report, it's very worrying. And we need to hear from them, Chair. I request, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's quite clear that we would need to take note of what the members have said. It's very serious. We can't allow a situation where this matter is delayed further. We will take note of the fact that it has not served before the board. If there is any need for the board to respond, we will allow space to do so. But for now, let's interact with the report that is before us, because the report responds to allegations that have been made, which are in the public interest. And it is in the interest of the Legal Aid Board that as soon as possible, also their side of the story must be heard by the public. And this is how we will be able to improve service delivery. But I do want to make the point to all our entities that the issues raised by members are very serious. We would have really expected that if there is a report of this nature, which is Zoom and Microsoft, an agent board meeting was supposed to have been convened to deal with these issues. And the report, in fact, the request that despite the fact that the matter was deemed agent, but the board did not sit or deemed it necessary to sit on an agent basis, not to be a convincing reason at all. And we hope this is the last time we hear such kind of excuses. And because if we say we want to turn a new leaf in terms of dealing with service delivery, it must be indeed a new leaf. We have been, as a committee, this is the second episode that we are responding to from the NCA, because all allegations, we take them very seriously. So I would rule that the Legal Aid Board presents, and we do take note that it has not served before the board. The board can still have a discussion, taking into consideration the issue that we would have raised, and if they think, or we think both ways, they can either request to come back, or we will request them to come back. Thank you very much. Can I now hand over to you, Judge?
Thank you, Chair. Yes. Thank you, Chair. We've heard the concerns raised by the honorable members. Obviously, we would not go against that. I will now hand over to management, which has prepared this report, the CEO and the legal services executive will now do the presentation to you. We thank you for also having noted that we at the board have not met. However, let me say that the board executive committee, as I said, did have an urgent meeting about this matter. And in fact, when we met with the minister last week, we informed the minister about this and actually informed the minister that we are dealing with this matter and the board is only meeting on the 27th. So please, We did not deem it necessary to have an urgent board meeting for the reasons set out by the deputy. But let me not make this thing a long discussion. We're not taking issue with your decision now that you've decided. Let me also inform you that, Chair, as you know, as I told you, that I'm busy with a hearing in respect of the reopened inquest of Dr. Neil Agate. a counselor waiting for me. I informed them that I'll be back at about 11 o'clock. So I hope that if the meeting is not finalized by 11, you'll excuse me and the deputy will be there. Thank you. I now hand over to the CEO to start with the presentation of the report.
Apologies, Chair.
Thank you.
Apologies, Chair. Honourable Neode is requesting that the host allow the pinning function so she can pin the interpreter. She is unable to see the interpreter unless the host allows pinning.
Okay, thank you. Can that be done urgently? The CEO, you have 30 minutes until 25 to 11. You can start.
Sorry, Chair. CEO's asked me to share the presentation and run it, but I'm not able to share it unless it's also released. The host disables it so that I'm able to share it, Chair. Sorry to interrupt.
Thank you, Chair. While they are busy sorting out the presentation, I may start with your permission.
Yes, proceed, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. As the Chairperson has already introduced that my name is Mantiti Kula and I'm the CEO of Legal Aid. With me from the management team, I'm joined in by Mr. Patrick Handemark, who is our Chief Legal Executive, Mr. Advocate Brian Nair, who is our National Operations Executive, and Mr. Sitopo Mamukheti, who is our Chief Operations Officer. And we have the Chairperson Deputy Chair and the Audit Committee Chair, Mme Mamudike. We thank you, members and honorable chairperson, for affording us the opportunity to share the recent ENC program on Legal Aid SA. The program that was aired on the 26th of January 2021, covering allegations made by legal aid applicants about alleged poor services, portrayed Legal Aid SA service delivery in an unfavorable light. So we really appreciate the opportunity to come share with the committee the client complaints in detail and also share with the committee our assessment of the complaints and the gaps that we have identified based on the client's feedback. And also we have also included the Legal Aid SA legal delivery environment just to share with the members the programs, procedures, systems that are in place to ensure the delivery of quality legal services. So that will be our presentation outline. But also would like the committee to note that the responses that the legal aid responses on the matter were provided in a detailed interview with our chief legal executive on the 21st of January before the program was aired, but neither of those responses were aired on the program. And it's our submission that while some allegations are unfounded, our own investigations revealed that there were gaps in the delivery of affected client service offerings. And the client experiences were not in line with the desired client satisfaction outcomes. We have contacted all complainants to date so that we provide them with feedback, obtain further instructions, arrange further consultations, and mandates where required. And the gaps that we will share with you, the four pertinent gaps and the 10 specific gaps are currently receiving attention and specific service recovery interventions are being rolled out. So firstly, we'll deal with the current complaints. All the four matters that were raised in the program related to divorce matters. And two of the matters, the mandates were terminated in September 2020 and March 2020 respectively. Next slide, Patrick. In matter one, the client applied for legal aid in 2015. The application for legal aid, like I said, is for divorce in a customary marriage, which marriage is disputed by the other party. In 2016, that's about 4 years ago, the matter was allocated to a legal practitioner, and the work covered by the initial practitioner consisted pre-trial conference, expert notices, etc. 3 years later, in May 2019, the client lodged a complaint with one of the supervisors, and the matter was allocated to another practitioner. And the initial practitioner resigned with immediate effect following the formal complaint. During May 2019 and December 2020, an investigation was underway to determine what work was done, and no evidence of work could be found, as the contents of the file, of our file, court file, and opponent's files could not be found. And this is regrettable because it resulted in significant delays in being able to take the matter forward. Another thing, the client paid for an expert report on advice of the initial practitioner, whereas legal aid has dedicated monies available where experts are required. We will request a proof of payment, and on once received, the client will be refunded on the amount that they have used to pay for the expert report. Thank you. The actual payment of the cool drink money, as raised in the program, will be considered once we proof of payment is finished. But post the program, we have determined the client's interest in the retirement annuity, and an interdict will be sought as a further precaution to protect the client's rights. The duplicate original report was obtained from the expert, so no prejudice against the client as alleged in the program will be suffered. We are busy resurrecting the file, and we have followed up with the client on the 26th of January 2021 for feedback. An instruction was not honored. A new date is set for 10th of February, and we are awaiting further instructions with regard to the enforcement of Rule 43. Thank you. In the second matter, the client applied for legal aid in 2017. The plaintiff wants forfeiture of government subsidy house in her favor, but evidence needs to be presented showing that the plaintiff contributed to the estate and that there are no grounds for forfeiture. There have been five practitioners attending to the matter, which is also regrettable. Three were due to resignation, and one practitioner was appointed to address the language barrier. The defendant is unrepresented, and attempts were made to convene a roundtable conference to try and settle the matter, but the defendant did not cooperate. The practitioner then withdrew the matter in August 2018, and the client reapplied for legal aid in 2019. A pre-trial was sought on 29 January 2019, but the date never allocated until a further request was submitted on the 7th of August 2019. The pre-trial proceeded on the 6th of December 2019 in the absence of the defendant, who did not arrive despite being advised of the date. The client was present, and the practitioner consulted with the client. The client lodged a formal complaint on the 27th of February 2020 about the delay in finalizing a matter. A court date for an opposed matter was requested on the 5th of March 2020 and a date was given for the 1st of June 2020. On that day, the matter could not proceed due to COVID-19 court directions. A fresh complaint was also received on the 18th of August, but it was explained to the client that the courts were not issuing court dates for opposed divorces. The consent paper was furnished to the client to obtain the defendant's signature. A date was obtained for 14 December 2020 on the unopposed divorce roll, but the defendant refused to sign the consent paper. Despite follow-ups, the defendant still refused to sign the consent paper. This was explained to the client, but she did not understand the practitioner, who then sought assistance of her colleagues to explain in Afrikaans. This is where the client alleges that she was told she came to the court on a wrong day. Due to this language barrier, a fifth practitioner was appointed. A trial date on the opposed roll was sought for 15 January 2021, but a pre-trial date was allocated by the court for 12 March 2021. A letter detailing the discussion with the new practitioner was prepared in Afrikaans for the client to understand the delays pertaining to her matter. With regard to matter three, the client is currently not a client of Legal Aid SA, but the client has interacted with Legal Aid at the Post of Stream local office and also in the Joburg office. At the first consultation on 5th March 2018, the complainant advised that the matters were in court on 6th March 2018 and requested legal assistance. The civil manager went to court and found that the respondent was not legally represented in either matter. Legal Aid Regulation 13.2 determined that we cannot provide legal representation when the other party is not legally represented. Both the complainant and the court were verbally informed that we could not assist due to this exclusion in the policy. The complainant said that we did not assist with ensuring that she obtained primary care of the children. This is not correct, as it was requested in the plea and the counterclaim served and filed on behalf of the client in the divorce matter. The husband also sought primary care of the children, and that family advocate report was sought as per the legal requirements to make a recommendation to the court as to primary care and contact. The family advocate conducted an inquiry and brought a report in August 2019 recommending that the primary care be given to the father. The client alleges that there is a court order giving custody to the husband. We are unaware of such a court order, as the family advocate's report is a recommendation to the court and does not bind the court. Legal representatives are not permitted in the meetings relating to the family advocate's investigation. The client also alleges that there was a delay in transferring her file to Johannesburg. The request was received on the 3rd of April 2019 and the file was sent on 24 April 2019 and our Joburg local office confirmed receipt on 27th of May 2019. The matter could not proceed until the family advocate report was received in August 2019. And once our Port of Stroom office received the report, they transmitted it via email to our Joburg local office. In the same matter, there were delays between September 2019 and March 2020 by the practitioner at our Joburg local office. and our civil practitioner was remiss in not addressing the complaint. Disciplinary transgressions, performance shortcomings were already under investigation in relation to both the practitioner and the civil manager from the Joburg local office that were unrelated to this matter, and they are both no longer in our employ. We were not even able to locate our file, but the current private attorney has furnished copies of all documents that was in our file. There is no record of a written termination of our mandate and request for our file in that matter. A formal letter has been addressed to the client via her current attorney to determine if she wants to seek legal aid assistance again. In matter four, this matter did not feature in the program, but we did receive a complaint via ENCA. The complainant is not currently a legal SA client, as her mandate for divorce was terminated in September 2017. We have assisted the client before in an eviction matter that was settled through alternative dispute resolution in May 2018. With regard to her divorce matter, it commenced in 2012, and our Pretoria office initially assisted. The complainant moved to Rustenburg and then was assisted by a private law firm. In August 2019, there was a complaint relating to the maintenance matter where at the same time the status of the divorce was raised, and the head of office did call the plaintiff's attorney and the plaintiff. This may have created an impression that the office would again deal with the matter. A consultation has been arranged with the client to seek an instruction in the divorce and to ensure that the mandate of the private attorney is terminated and the file obtained. There are two challenges in this matter that still have to be addressed. Firstly, to determine if the court file has all the original pleadings, but the COVID directions currently restrict access to the court registrar's offices. Secondly, to determine the whereabouts of the plaintiff for purposes of serving any notices on him, as he was last said to be at a mine in South America. That is then an overview of the four complaints that we have received from the ENCA. In our discussion with the ENCA prior to the program being aired on the 26th, we identified about 10 issues and we have summarized them as follows. Lack of communication on progress and that practitioners do not revert when called. Telling clients that they have too much work and if client by cold drinks, it might speed up cases. Legal practitioners refusing to follow instructions of the client. Asking the client to provide an expert report. Or asking the client, I beg your pardon, asking the client to pay for an expert report. Legal practitioner took file home and now the contents of the file is lost. Not assisting with maintenance, domestic violence matters, and being told to go to court alone. Legal practitioner did not assist with getting custody of children. Legal practitioner told client to get a job and instruct private attorneys. For a client that was transferred to another office, it took months for a legal practitioner to be allocated to assist her further. That our legal practitioners told client to go to court on their own on several occasions. That's a summary of our identified issues. Like I said, though some allegations could not be founded, our own investigation into the complaints reveals that there were gaps in the delivery of the four clients based on their client experience, especially relating to delays. The existing controls pertaining to the delivery of quality legal services were bypassed and our systems were not able to identify
the unethical conduct practitioners. The gaps identified, the mitigating measures, that is the current programs, procedures, systems that are in place to ensure quality of legal services, measures taken against those bypassing the standard operating procedures, processes and system enhancements are discussed in detail in the subsequent slides. We have identified four themes based on the four outlined complaints that are current legal interventions, that's gap one, monitoring and support do not translate into the attributes required for individual legal practitioner, as you saw in the summary of our issues. The monitoring and support of the legal practitioner do not translate into attributes required for positive client treatment. In the gap two, attributes of the legal practitioner do not lead to required legal actions. Legal actions taken by the legal practitioner do not translate into legal outputs and legal desired legal outcomes. The turnover in legal practitioners and loss of capacity due to budget cuts over several years may have contributed to the delay, but not entirely. Legal managers not effectively managing quality and monitoring implementation of instructions issued to practitioners. Legal quality assurance unit, which is within the audit department, their methodology only reviews closed files and not old pending matters. We have in the next subsequent slide highlighted what controls we have with regard to close old pending matters. That is the standard operating procedure for files and also the pending file list per practitioner every 6 months. We have then drawn up a table just to share with the honorable members how we analyze the 10 issues that we picked up for these complaints. The lack of communication, it's evident from the account or the client experience that there were gaps with regard to communication. But when we look at our control environment, we have the client services charter that stipulates clearly the attributes of a legal practitioner and what we aspire, what outcomes we aspire to attain are clearly articulated in the service client services charter. There's a standard operating procedure for files for legal practitioners, and there's a civil file supervision standard operating procedures. In two matters, two practitioners, the one in Pretoria and also in Joburg, and one manager were subjected to disciplinary process because it was found that their work was not aligned to the mitigating measures or the control measures that we have in the environment. The opportunity that we see is that we must still do client services training again so that we can emphasize the importance of client expectations management and also the importance of client feedback, and that we finalize the short messaging system on a new ELA system that will continually update clients on the status of their reports, and also revisit the SOP training on the files, on the client supervisions, to ensure that the control measures that we are in place are not bypassed. The issue that relates to alleged work overload, in terms of our legal aid regulation 9.1c, legal aid will only take work provided it has the necessary resources available And we do have a pending file list per practitioner that supervisors and managers must oversee on a constant basis. We also have a report on a no work or no activity on file for 60 days. So we're able to pick in most instances if there is no activity in respect to clients' files. And also there's a report that we check on matters exceeding turnaround times, and our code of ethics prohibits our legal practitioners from asking cold drink money. Like I said, the actions that were taken, if proven to us that the practitioners do ask for cold drink money, we will investigate and the corresponding disciplinary process will be undertaken. Refusal of legal aid where insufficient capacity is there, or refusal of legal aid where we have insufficient capacity or where we implement waiting period as well, has to be communicated to clients. The audit on matter activity reports against file by provincial office as well has to be strengthened. And also, we also have a report on a management of practitioner workload at a local level that will empower the head of office to intervene based on that report in the event any of the legal practitioners is overloaded. We have to, on a constant basis, as a remedial action, monitor the vacancies and the impact on workload for respective courts, and monitor the impact of budget cuts on capacity for each office. On the issue of refusing to follow instructions, there is a complaint standard operating procedure that if a client feels that the legal practitioner is not following the instructions, that they can escalate that to the immediate local office, our advice line, or even to provincial or head office. And in the matters, the instructions were found to have been followed. A consent paper was prepared in the second instance, and the pleadings were filed for the client to indicate that the instructions were followed. But we saw an opportunity that we must have the client information brochures or sheets that will manage expectations of the client and keep them abreast throughout the process. The request for payment to pay for expects, that is out of line and not aligned to our ethics or code of conduct. That should have been escalated via a complaint SOAP, but a disciplinary code and procedure would have taken care of the matter if the client had escalated the matters. The payment of money is not raised as a complaint. We only got to know about it in the program, and the employee has already left the employee of legal aid. If the client furnishes us with the proof that that money was paid, we will reimburse the client. We will make sure that client information at all offices also cover that clients do not have to pay for their own expects once they are offered legal aid assistance. And we'll also have an audit to in all offices to ensure that client information is properly displayed. The loss of file and file contents, that could have been picked up in the file verification, file supervision SOP. The remedial action that is currently underway with the Pretoria matter is reconstruction of the file is being undertaken. The file verification on civil matters should be done on a quarterly basis as opposed to how we're doing it currently every 6 months. And like you say, we must develop promotional material that clearly explains the procedure to follow if client is not satisfied with their legal practitioners. Not obtaining custody of children, that whereby the client alleged that she's not a mother now because of legal aid. The complaints SOP would have been applicable, but the pleadings in the file indicate that custody was sought in the pleadings as per the client's instruction, but it was the family advocate's report that granted custody to the father. We will provide client with the pleadings to show that the instructions have been affected. Allegation that our practitioners are told the client to get employed and appoint private practitioners, that as well could have been addressed with the complaint stop that will make sure that the clients going forward are aware of the complaint standard operating procedure as to which channels they can utilize if they are unhappy with the conduct of a legal practitioner. Delays with appointment of practitioner in the matter in progress, that as well, the manager was subjected to an inquiry before the complaint and she left the employ of legal aid. Practitioners were also investigated before the complaint and some of them have left the employ of legal aid. Where there are systemic delays are experienced, it should be communicated to clients. And in the same breath, where delays are caused by capacity constraints, that as well should be communicated to the clients. Client said on several occasions, they were asked to go to court on their own. And that the internal control is that we have a limitation of assistance on Regulation 13, and we also have an appeal against refusal in Regulation 34 and the complaint SOP. But clients ought to be made aware of those limitations of assistance and also of their right of appeal against legal aid refusal. The client did not attend court, but the Family Advocate's Office for the Care and Access Investigation, where practitioners are not permitted to in those family advocate meetings. Delay or systemic delays. Our client relationship management, our stakeholder relationship standard operating procedure, our participation in National Efficiency Enhancement Committee and also the provincial leg of it, delays caused by missing court records, change of legal practitioner, tracing opposite party, non-response to call SMS by clients, lengthy wait for court dates cannot be ascribed to practitioners. Where delays caused by practitioners, action taken to ensure urgent attention is always prioritized, and stakeholder engagements on an ongoing basis to ensure that backlogs are reduced as soon as possible. So this is our analysis of the complaints, and we also have highlighted the control environment with regard to the issues that were raised. In the subsequent slide, my colleague Patrick will go into detail on the programs, procedures, and system that are in place to ensure quality of legal services. And that will include the legal quality framework, the client complaints, professional negligence, practitioner caseloads, practitioner quality assessments, and case backlogs. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Mandete, my challenge with you, you took all the time, and we had indicated to you that we are giving you 30 minutes for the presentation. So how much time does your colleague need so that you can be able to assess?
Thank you, Chair. Basically, we have covered the request of the committee in the sense that we have outlined in detail each complaint. We have shared with the committee our assessment of the complaints, and we have, for each of the complaint, took the committee in to say, this is the framework that we have, but unfortunately, those controls were bypassed in as per the client experiences of these matters that were escalated to ENCA. And in our... previous engagements.
Ms. Mantezi, how much time do you need or does your colleague need?
10 minutes will be fine, Chair, with your permission.
So you will have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable. I think I just want to, from our perspective, I will only go through some of the slides to indicate some of the issues. So from a Legal Aid South Africa perspective, we take a very structured approach to legal quality. And you'll see it from what we've got here in terms of what we call our legal quality framework. And this is where you'll see the gaps that we identified really linked to the different areas of we look at in terms of client experience and what happens in matters. And I don't intend going through that in detail, but obviously it looks at the issue of the legal practitioner themselves and the relationship between the client and the legal practitioner, the monitoring mechanisms we have in place and the interventions from a management side to monitor that quality and the support of practitioners. And then also the legal matter and then the outputs and the outcomes that comes out of that, as well as then client experience and perceptions that come through. So we manage our legal quality in within this framework and understand then where the issues arise within the framework and where we need to then address any gaps that are identified. One of the main things that we have, and it must be understood, I'm only dealing with some of the core systems that we have in place. Legal Aid has a substantial number of systems, but I think the time available to us here won't permit us to go through all of them. So we've pulled out certain critical ones, and particularly our practitioner quality assessments. You'll see there we're indicating across the different categories of employees over the last four financial years, including the current year, in terms of the total number of practitioners assessed, those not achieving targets, what percentage that is, the average scores they achieve within our legal quality reviews. This is undertaken, as the CEO indicated, by our legal quality assurance unit, which falls outside operations in our internal audit department and therefore acts independently from us as the operation side, although from an operation side, we also have our own systems. So this is where the independent review of our systems happen. Then obviously our client interface management, I think you've got to understand that from a legal aid perspective, we took on 51,177 new matters and 351,061 new criminal matters in 2019-20. Currently, as we stand now, well, at the end of the financial year, our pending load for civil matters stood at 57,392. And in criminal matters, 143,789. Now, we do have systems for client complaints, and the CEO mentioned our SOP. So the number of complaints we received in 2019-20 was 2,490, which from a complaints perspective, although no complaints are welcome, but let's understand where there is service delivery, where there are employees, we must understand complaints will arise. And we accept that as an organization. And we look at them and take them seriously and will address them and deal with them necessarily. But it does make up only 0.6% of our overall matters that we have where clients lodge complaint. So if you look at the breakdown of the statistics on the next page, you will come and see for the different provinces, there's our total new matters, the total number of complaints. And as you can see, the two provinces that stand out, which obviously need an additional focus, and where the complaints are above 1%, where the rest are mostly below, within the average of 0.6% or below it. So the system is there, we monitor it, and then also from our, and this is where we get our complaints from, so they can lodge complaints via our ethics hotline. Our advice line, complaints line, has now also become the complaints line. So there's a toll-free number. They can also use the WhatsApp to lodge the complaint. We also have the web inquiry if anyone wants to use the web inquiry to do that. And our complaints line then, or our hotline then, uses a web page. And those, the recording that happens there with the complaint is put into a web page and sent to the local office with the recording for them to address and respond within 2 weeks as to what they've done about the complaint. You can also lodge a complaint at any office via telephone or in person. You can via email to the head of office, provincial office or national office, all from our website. All our contact emails are there. We also have Facebook and social media, and we've received complaints via that as well. And we look at those and take them on. So those are the sources on where those complaints, if in detail, would come from. So as I said, it requires all of those complaints to be captured in our complaints webpage. The relevant manager must investigate the complaint, ensure that the complaints where it is valid is properly addressed, and they must be addressed within 14 days, and we also monitor that time period. And the manager must record the outcome of the investigation and action taken to address the complaint. And then the turnaround times for addressing complaints are monitored by the provincial offices. And then they also conduct a quarterly review of this and an analysis of the complaints and what the issues are, which are reflected on the next slide. I don't intend going into the detail there. The committee can go and have a look. Then in terms of anything that comes in our complaints register, we go and look at it to understand it and what is required to address the issue that came from that complaint. We also, in certain, and some of the concerns that were raised in the programs might have some implications from a professional negligence perspective. But just to say, we do have insurance cover in place. We currently do have, in terms of our professional negligence report, we have 8 matters on it. Of these, 3 are for criminal matters and 5 relate to civil. The oldest matter dates back to 2013. The remaining matters, there were 2 in 2017, 1 in 2018, 2 in 2019, and 2 in 2020. So obviously some of that relates to allowing matters to prescribe, not properly executing client instructions, or claims in criminal matters relates mostly to delays in applying for bail or prosecuting an appeal against the conviction and sentence. And we've assessed the merits of this for ourselves versus, and the majority, as far as we're concerned, do not have prospects of success. That's just the table setting out the professional negligence claims and our assessment and for the different provinces as to where those claims arose and where we did our merit assessments looking at them. Then obviously the next issue comes, practitioner caseload was a particular issue that was raised. And so we always have a look at our practitioner caseloads. So if we look at it from the criminal side, because although most of these complaints linked to divorce and civil, we thought we would show the committee also what we have in terms of our criminal side. So the targets are set in new, finalized, and pending matters for local and any offices that are rurally based, according to our assessment, that caseload gets reduced to 80% to take account of travel and distances that have to be covered. So in the district court, you will see that new and finalized is 275 and pending should be 150. We have a total of 1,233 practitioners at services district court. On the regional court, it's 125 new, 175, no, that should be the same, sorry, my apologies, should be 175, 175 new and finalized, and the pending load at 100. We have 426 practitioners covering the regional court. High court, we expect across new, finalized, pending no more than 50, and we have 88 practitioners where that is applicable. In district and regional court matters, practitioners take on all matters in the courts that they cover because we have a court coverage model. In the high court, we, in some instances, we have a practitioner per judge model where we have sufficient capacity, but that's only in about 2 of our 15 high court units. Practitioner caseloads does correlate to the volumes of matters that come through those particular courts. And local offices would make interventions for practitioners where the role is significantly higher than the practitioner target. And we also, from a national perspective, review on our court coverage the demand coming out of a particular court, and that then aligns to the numbers of days that we will service a particular court and whether we increase the capacity like it, particularly where you've got what they call channelization courts, we double up on our capacity there. Caseloads in criminal matters are set to increase due to a reduction in court coverage, due to budget cuts that are now anticipated for 21-24 period. If we look at it, 89% of the district court practitioners carry less than 150 matters, 9% carry between 150 to 250, and then 2% or 23 carry more than 250 matters. In regional court, 93% carry less than 150, 6% between 150 and 200 matters, and only 1% or 2 carry more than 250 matters in the regional court. Then you go on to high courts, 83% have less than 50 matters, 7% have between 50 to 75, and 10% carry between 75 and 100 matters. No one in the high court above 100 matters. Criminal management, 83% have less than 50 matters, 7% between 50 and 75, and then, 9 have less than 75 to 100 matters. So that's just in terms of what they're carrying currently in terms of caseloads. On the civil side, we have a similar system for new finalized and pending, with rural targets reduced to 80%. For civil level 1 and 2, which is different experience levels of practitioners, we have 167 practitioners across the board for new finalized and pending. It's 250. In civil labor and high court, that is 125, and we have 12 practitioners that are focused on the labor and high court. So practitioner caseload does correlate also to complexity and also demand for services at an office. The number of matters carried by an office can be managed. Just trying to see.
We have 2 minutes left.
Thank you. So yeah, the slide deals with the caseloads where we have on the civil side of things. Our turnaround times and monitoring of backlogs, we've got our system. And I think in terms of turnarounds, criminal service are determined in conjunction with relevant stakeholders, and matters beyond turnaround time are regarded as backlog matters. So in the district court, anything beyond more than 15% beyond 6 months is then, for us, we monitor it. For the regional court, anything beyond 20% that's beyond 9 months. High court, we set the target to be done within 12 months, and we don't want more than 30% of our matters going beyond 12 months. Civil, it's on average 18 months, but we want less than 30% of our matters to be beyond that. Now, if we look at what has happened from 2019-20 to the current position in the third quarter of 2021, our backlogs for both criminal and civil matters have increased significantly due to COVID-19. And are currently at the following level. So in district court at the end of 2019-20, it was at 10%. It's now sitting at 22% backlog. So that's 22% of the cases are beyond 6 months. In the regional court, it's increased from 26% to 49%. So it means that 49% of our cases in the regional court are now beyond 9 months. In the high court, it increased from 28% to 43%. So it means 43% of our matters in the high court are now beyond 12 months. And on the civil, it increased from 18% to now 42%. So now 42% of our civil matters are beyond the 18-month turnaround time that we have set. I think just in terms of that, that just sets out the details over the last 3 years. And that's some of the aspects we wanted to highlight for the committee to understand the context within which we're operating, but the systems that we have in place to monitor and understand what we have as a challenge. Thank you, Chair. If I can hand
back very much.
The conclusion and way forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Handa. If we can take away the screen, the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I've taken it away.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, now it's time for you to ask questions or make comments. I will now note hands. I have Honorable Newbold, I have Honorable Bettenbach, I have Honorable Swartz, Honorable Mfokeng, Honorable Mkolomola, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to Legal Aid South Africa for the very detailed presentation. Just a couple of questions that I have. my apologies. Let me just have a look here. I just need to see the interpreter. Okay. The legal practitioners. How does legal aid screen them to check whether they are able to do the job, or do you just appoint any legal practitioner based on the area or per area? My first question. Secondly, from the ENCA program that we watched, I had a couple of questions come up. How do you follow up if a legal practitioner did do, whether they had meetings or not? Because in the program, it continuously said that the file is empty, there's nothing recorded in the file, etc. So how does each legal aid office monitor to make sure that legal practitioners write their reports and keep that on the file and up to date? Then the program kept saying, well, we are paper-based. In the program, they said we are paper-based, which means there's nothing typed and filed electronically, nothing emailed, nothing in terms of that to keep it on file on the computer system. Is everything on paper? We obviously transforming to the fourth industrial revolution now. So is everything still on paper, or is it because of lack of resources? And okay, so the out of those five, three legal practitioners resigned. Now, what was their reason for resigning? Does Legal Aid South Africa do an exit interview or an exit interview to find out the reason why legal practitioners would resign, and what were the reasons given? So with that, then also I want to know, the client, do they complete a client satisfaction form that you know whether the client is satisfied with the service provided by the Legal Aid South Africa, or where Legal Aid, where they can see to up the quality of service? And the regulation 13.2 says that it's the policy of Legal Aid South Africa that they cannot proceed if the other party does not have a legal representation. Now, this can be discriminating against, for example, a woman who needs assistance. If I appointed Legal Aid practitioner, but the husband refuses to get legal representation, and my case then drags on for long. So my question is, doesn't that regulation discriminate against people who are looking for assistance? And I quickly checked the website of Legal Aid South Africa with regards to the contact details. Nowhere do I see an SMS contact number. You can only call. Now, if I need to call, you know, the one problem with the deaf community, if they need services, they must go to the DEFSA offices, and then DEFSA offices need to make the phone call and make a booking, and that delays the process further. So I would prefer as a client to contact Legal Aid directly, but I don't see an SMS number on the website. I think that's it for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nugot. Honorable Glenys Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Legal Aid for this presentation. It's very complete, very detailed, comprehensive. And at the outset, I must say that I, on the one hand, have some sympathy for them. The truth lies, there's always two sides to a story, and the truth lies somewhere in between. And clients, generally speaking, in legal matters, will be happy if they win, and unhappy if they lose. And if they lose, they'll more than likely blame the lawyer. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's done anything wrong. It just means that they haven't, that the sometimes unrealistic expectations of clients have not been met. And that can't always be ascribed to the performance of the lawyer. So this is a difficult terrain that we're dealing with. And it's easy to blame the lawyer. And, you know, you're dealing with people, so not all people get along equally well. So the client may not get along well with the lawyer. The lawyer may not get along well with the client. That doesn't necessarily mean the lawyer hasn't done his job or won't do it to the best of his ability. But there may be some discomfort, which could also lead to complaints, because people who are not familiar with the legal profession, who are not lawyers, who don't spend their time in court, don't always understand the difference between personal and professional matters, so they tend to take things more personally than most. Having said that, it's clear to me that legal aid, in fact, does have comprehensive measures in place to try and deal with these types of issues that arise. They're alive to the fact that, you know, it is an adversarial profession, it's an adversarial environment, and it's an emotional environment where people sometimes lose objectivity, specifically with regards to their own problems, and that's just human. I'm not criticizing it. It just makes it all the more difficult sometimes for lawyers to do their job. On the ENCA excerpt, there was an admission by legal aid that files go missing. Now, that is understandable to a degree. Files could go missing. They should not go missing. That specifically in the presentation, I may have missed it. And as Honourable Neva Duffin said, this, you know, we are in the 21st century and technology is available. So I would like to see them looking at a way that files do not go missing. It is achievable, not easily, I agree, but it is achievable. What concerns me is the caseload per legal practitioner. I understand that they have X amount of lawyers and exponentially more clients. And every lawyer, of course, carries more than one case. But similar to the predicament that prosecutors find themselves in, if you have one lawyer dealing with 200 plus matters, it's a huge ask, a really huge ask, to expect them to deal 100% effectively with 100% of those cases, 100% of the time. It's almost impossible. And then things do go missing. Attention is divided. And as a result of that, problems will arise. I understand that's not a short-term, there's no short-term solution for that, but I think as a committee, we need to keep a very close eye on this aspect. Because legal aid does do very well. They've, as I've said before, been the shining light in the justice cluster. I hope they continue to do so. It's an important department. It provides a service that is so essential for the people of South Africa. And as a committee, if we're aware of this enormous caseload and of the complexity of cases that make up each case in that caseload, then I think we need to, at some point, revisit the resources available to legal aid. If we're going to hold them to a very high standard, and we must, then we must also place them in a position to meet that standard. And if they have lawyers that are carrying 250-plus complex cases, they're only human. Mistakes are going to be made. People are going to be unhappy. Programs like this will be aired. And instead of where blame is to be apportioned, we must apportion it and hold them accountable. But you can't lose sight of the fact that law is not an easy profession. Litigation is never easy. And if you one lawyer with 250 different individual clients with a variety of issues, it's almost impossible to expect them to perform at 100% all the time. So I think we need to bear that in mind. So there are some issues that are cause for concern. Having seen the report, I think that that Legal Aid is doing the best that it can under the circumstances to manage the matter. And I think it's unfortunate that now and then there will be unhappy people and their complaints must be addressed. They must be addressed. Must try and avoid this kind of bad publicity. But as a committee, I think we also need to look at ways that we can help Legal Aid to achieve the kind of standard that we're expecting from them. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mpuke.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I think one of the questions was asked by Honorable Neville Drachen is about the resignations. It seems as if once people resign, they follow up into the role. And my question is, where do they go? Because they are still going to be legal practitioners somewhere. And I'm asking myself a question to say, don't they have a system to report those people that immediately they are told to say that you are having disciplinary hearing, they run away? I think if we can understand that, because I thought Law Society would be there to list people like this so that we don't have people like them. The other issue that was worrying is about the issue of Africans and a language barrier. And I was asking myself that a report of a client was in Africans and it looked as if it was a problem. Couldn't they get a person who's actually able to help that person with the language and deal with that person in the language that he or she prefers? And that cannot be something that comes into being an obstacle for somebody to be assisted. So on the issue of slide number 10, there's a complaint number 2. There's something that is written there to say 15 December and 14 January 2021. And my question is that which 15 December? Because it can be 15 December 2019. And that is something that they need to check because it's really misleading to understand which dates are they talking about. And those are small things, but they can mean so much. And so on the gaps, the challenges, I think I have a problem with especially on slide 22. You know, they are talking about the turnover in with legal practitioners, and it's exactly what was actually mentioned when there was a presentation on legal quality framework. It's very clear that Legal Aid South Africa is aware about their challenges of the turnover capacity. And the question that was asked by Honorable Neil Vogt Drachen by saying that, do you really check these people? Do they know what they are coming to be doing? Because it looks like most of them, there's a problem and you have identified the problem, which I'm happy about as Legal South Africa to say that you had lack of communication, and which is a very serious problem that you are having. And on the other slide, I think it was 24, which was spoken about by one of my colleagues on the loss of files and file contents. I think the issue of an industrial revolution is something that you need to look at because it's going to be very disturbing when somebody has to have 250 files. And it also goes to an extent of asking a question to say, do you have targets for legal practitioners to have so many files? Because I'll tell you that I've seen in one court in Atteridgeville where a legal practitioner was just calling on when the people are coming in, they're saying, I'm available. Do you want legal aid? I'm available. You know, collecting files like that, at the end of the day, that person had 7. And my question was, is this person going to be able to deal with this? But it's very clear that it looks like they are given targets and maybe they should disclose to us. So on slide number 33, I wish that that slide can be shown. That slide, it says that the civil matters were 51,177, and then there were 351,000 on new criminal matters. But something that is very surprising, it says pending workload, civil matters are 50,000. this one in the same year. The other thing on the percentage are less 0.6. We need to look at it. Let us look at our numbers because I think
Honorable
the number that I see.
Honorable Mfuke, yes, your bandwidth is very low. Your bandwidth is low. If maybe you can switch off your video, we can't hear you properly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible now?
Yeah, better.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. And Chair, I was saying that the caseload, the practitioner's caseload is one that is worrying. They must be able to tell us whether they have a target for members, for their legal practitioners, because it's very clear that the people are just running with so many numbers. And the other thing on the complaint set, I think it's slide number 34. The total numbers are there that are saying how many cases and all that, but they don't explain how many out of those cases were dropped or people left without coming back to them. And then also they were showing how many are left in provinces. And that slide for me, it's misleading. It's not actually in full. We need to see the whole thing. And the last one is on the client complaint mechanism. They have a list until to the Facebook to say this is what people can do and do and not and do all that. But it doesn't look like they have education to their citizens. Maybe they can tell us on what do they do. But there is a slide that is also worrying, Chair. I think it's on the gaps where it seems as if they are blaming the media for saying this is what the media said, it's not what the client said. I don't know, maybe they should explain themselves into that. And also the receipt that is needed for a cold drink. What kind of a receipt are they looking for? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mfokeng. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies, I was disconnected. So if you can't hear me, then I'll turn the video off. So I missed, thank you, I missed a bit due to the disconnection, but I also wanted to indicate that I also have an appreciation, like the Honorable Breitenbach does have, that when in litigation matters, you will always have clients that might not be satisfied with the service rendered. And also there obviously are challenges that legal aid faces, and these areas are highlighted at the end of the presentation. Challenges around budget, challenges around court sittings now as a result of COVID-19, challenges around the caseload, and of course loss of experienced practitioners. So I appreciate that one needs to consider these complaints against that background. That being said, I would like to just ask a few questions, because obviously one, the concern is these matters were highlighted in a television interview, but the question arises how widespread the issues are. And we got it back, we got an indication, 51,000 civil matters, 351,000 criminal matters, 2,490 complaints. I think when it comes to the issues of civil matters, and particularly when it comes to divorce matters, I fully appreciate, and I think we need to also understand, we're dealing with gender-based violence, we're dealing with these issues, we are dealing with very vulnerable women who are going through very tough times, and so we need to make sure, and so those gaps that were identified, I'm very pleased with the frank way that legal aid presented to us today very comprehensively. But the question is, how widespread are these issues? And I think it's very important for legal aid and for the board to consider when they look at this report, is this more widespread, and is the complaints mechanism working, given the premise that you will have dissatisfied clients? But I do want to just ask that question as to, yes, we've now seen this issue has come out, and yes, there are steps to be taken, but I do, one would be concerned if it was more widespread. The issue relating to the loss of files is of concern. I think that can be looked at. The one issue about being paper-based and then not keeping, destroying files after 5 years, I think that's problematic, given the fact that you in divorce matters, you might have ongoing matters of maintenance and custody that would, even though the presentation said there is a maintenance order in the one instance, I think years later, you could have maintenance custody issues arising. So I would ask the board to reconsider that issue. I think that it is a frank admission that controls were bypassed in certain of these circumstances. So I think it's very important for the board to look at that, to tighten up the processes. At the beginning of this, we said, the Honorable Braithma said, this is the crown jewel. I've seen it come over 20 years from total dysfunctionality to an absolute best performing, one of the best performing departments. So we cannot allow it to deteriorate in any way. So I'm sure that steps will be taken to improve the performance and to make sure. And I like what the one honorable member said about a questionnaire, whether clients fill in a questionnaire at the end of the services, which would evaluate the performance that is granted. And lastly, of course, the issue does raise issues about the issue of the budget cut that I did mention earlier and the impact that has. So thank you. Those are my comments from myself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Ngola, at some point you did raise your hand and then you're not sure whether you decided to withdraw or what.
No, Chair, it's the system that kicked me out.
Okay.
So I reconnected. Okay. Otherwise, my hand is still up.
Proceed, Honorable Ngola.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the first issue that I would like to raise is the matter at hand is that in that show, itself as it was flighted by ANC, it could not rise into the occasion. Is able to explain matters, is able to give confidence into the community. The person who was speaking on behalf of Legal Aid was Mr. Patrick. Fortunately, he's part of the meeting. I think the institution must do better in that, so that they are able to communicate a solid message to their clients and the society entirely. Because at some point, they may not be wrong, but if they are unable to communicate their programs and their processes correctly to the communities, it's going to cause the deficiency they are suffering from now. What was flighted there was just but few matters. But as people who are dealing with communities, we know the general complaint about Legal Aid and the services they render and the quality of the services they render. So I wish to raise that point.
Honorable Ngola, we can't hear you.
Okay. Whenever there speak to matters of nature.
Honorable Ngola? Can you repeat the last two paragraphs? We could not hear you at all.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. No, I was saying, Chair, if they must improve on communication whenever they are faced with matters of this nature. In particular, matters were flighted in full view of the public. Mr. Patrick Handamark did not do justice into the matter in that show. Fortunately, we were all watching. So they must improve in that regard. The second matter, Chair, I wished to raise is the issue of opening a criminal case only on the production of proof of payment. You know, Chair, we live in communities. We deal with people every day. We deal with such kind of problems every day. There's never been a day where this kind of silliness of money, where it is transferred, where it is done in an electronic way. What these people usually do, they it usually happens, particularly with related to legal aid and
Honorable Ngola, we are back again. Honorable Ngola.
So I understand if it's a correct way of speech when they say they will open a criminal case only on the provision. Yes, I can hear you now.
You are better now. Proceed.
Can you hear me now? And Vatsal Salam.
Yes, Mr. Wolf, on Kubek.
Chair, no, I think I have a network problem. Can you pass to another person? Okay.
You are the last person on
the
okay.
No, of dealing with the matter. If the only... Okay, Chair, I don't think the matter only on the provision of... proof of payment is a correct way to deal with the matter. When a legal practitioner of legal aid requests the money from the client and the client refuses, are we then saying because there was no transaction committed wrong? Was dealing with the matter only on the basis of the proof of payment, I don't think it's the correct way of dealing with it. They must find a way to deal with the kind of legal practitioners who do these things against our poor people, who unfortunately have got legal issues that must be presided over by legal aid. Chair, I've seen something that explains the turnaround time, but as when you read around time, and go back to the first matter that was flighted in the matter that we're discussing. The matter started in 2015, and the client came back and reported the matter and complained about the matter in 2019. So should we then think that the turnaround times, Zabo, are actually effective and they are working? But you can't say a matter of 2015 is still dragging until 2019. But the turnaround time in terms of the institution are completely against that. So is the legal aid able to monitor this, that are these matters finished in due time? There is an issue, Chair, about practitioners who do not revert back and all that. You know, Chair, I'm not sure if... what is provided in the presentation is a policy directive on case backlog. I mean on case close. Because it is actually a general complaint as well, the thing of case close. That one junior legal practitioner carries about 300 matters. Hence, it is not even feasible that they are going to revert back in time to the client. So I wish to suggest that legal aid must go back and look into the issue of the caseload properly, monitor it properly. If it's a policy directive, is it implementable down there on the ground as it relates to the legal aid practitioners? Was all of them, if you speak with them, they are complaining of the caseload, which makes them not to be effective in terms of dealing with matters they're supposed to deal. That's the second last issue, Chair, is the issue of quality assurance. There is a slide in the presentation that speaks of quality assessment. But I think, again, I would like to suggest that they must go back to the ground and see if the system they've designed to assess the quality of the services they provide is actually working. I'm asking this, Chair, because down there in the communities, there's a narrative about legal aid attorneys. That, for example, just a random one, Chair. When you go to Israel, they will tell you, no, abantu ba legal aid and bafuni, because ngamagoda kuhulumende bafuna sijonisa. Now, the narrative that is driven on the quality of the legal service we provide as legal aid is questionable on the ground.
Anabungana, I think that allegation you said, I think if you can repeat it in English so that everybody can understand it, especially about allegations about legal aid attorneys.
Thank you, sir. I'm saying, sir, there is a narrative driven by communities about the quality of services they receive from legal aid practitioners. The narrative, the random example I was making, sir, is that people are running away from briefing or instructing legal aid practitioners because they have a narrative that, no, they are state lawyers and they are there to make the accused people found guilty. So it actually speaks to the quality of the services that we provide. The last issue, Chair, which has been covered by some honorable members, is the issue of the loss of files, which I think is unfortunate, Chair, which I doubt we should be discussing such matters in 2021. We have been with legal aid for a number of times since we came into office. And we have repeatedly asked them, how far are they moving towards digital capturing of the information they have as the institution? So I think when they come back to report again, they must give a proper detail of how far have they gone in terms of digital capturing of files, capturing of evidence, capturing of everything that relates to the matters they preside over. We can't say over and over again discuss the issue of paperwork and its weaknesses and risks every day. We can't say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngola. Legal aid, I think there are issues that I think the deputy chair will have a challenge of answering them outside of a board sitting. I think let's deal with issues that are generally operational and that are within the management purview to act on them. And then I think there are issues that have been raised that of course would need that the board must take a policy decision. For instance, there is an issue that was raised by Honorable Leopold Drachens about a discriminatory rule, where if one party is not represented, then you cannot represent the other. That one, I think, is something that should the board deliberate on. there are quite a number of the issues that we think that it will be important for the board to come back to us after having received the report, gone through the report, then we would need to get a board stance. But there are issues that are generally managerial in nature. For instance, there was a question about exit interviews, whether you do conduct those exit interviews, where do these people go to, why are they not reported to the Legal Practice Council? I think even Judge Magume made mention of that, so why has that not happened? I think questions like those are questions that we would want to, you can respond to. We might need to have an interaction about your understanding of the fourth industrial revolution as it applies to the cost of doing business in your organization. Because I think my little experience is that there is a view of thinking that when you do or you procure a mass processing application, which is sometimes very expensive, then we are in the digital space, we are in the digital age. Whilst we are now thinking about systems and applications that have got artificial intelligence that can reduce a lot of the admin work that some of the practitioners are complaining about. There was an issue, for instance, of a questionnaire to gauge customer satisfaction. That can also be automated and have a bit of artificial intelligence to quickly analyze a customer satisfaction. But it's something that I think the board would need to apply itself, because I do think not only yourselves, but I do think that generally government departments have not really understood, or they do not know exactly what do they want out of the fourth industrial revolution, as it will apply to them operationally in terms of operational enhancement processes. Because you can't procure an ICT program when you have not seriously dealt with your operational needs, your strategic needs as an organization, because once you have done that, then that application must respond to those problems. But if you are just going to get an off-the-shelf application, then you'll be buying applications every 5 years. So it's not only something that is related to yourself, but I think most of the presentations that I've had, there is that problem, because I wouldn't be comfortable just for you to deal with the loss of files. Maybe you can automate the loss of files. That is one area, but you would need a comprehensive ICT strategy that will result into a comprehensive program of automation with elements of artificial intelligence. Then once you have that, it will reduce your caseloads, because it will reduce the amount of time that a legal practitioner has to do legal research. There are such programs on the market. So we might need to have a comprehensive ICT strategy from your side. But over to you.
Thank you very much. I have noted roughly 40 comments. Some of them were questions, some were comments from the honorable members of this committee, and we are grateful that they raised those issues. maybe the understanding that we had at the beginning has now borne fruition, in the sense that we have learned from the committee how best then can we also deal with improving our own systems in order to maximize our productivity in assisting members of the public with legal services. I share your views that there will be questions here which may need us to go back to the very same policies that we have, particularly the quality policies that we have to deal with the other comments that the members have made. Allow me then to ask the CEO and Mr. Undermark and probably Brian, to the extent that we are able to deal with the basic managerial issues that may be policy related, to then clarify where committee members have asked specific questions that do not need board interaction to the extent possible. And then the rest of the issues, Chair, with your permission, we will definitely, at your directive, come back to you to deal with them. I can tell you now from the top of my head that once a person runs away from the entity on the basis that there is a disciplinary hearing, that tells you that person is not going to tell you why they are running away, because they know that they have not complied with certain prescripts, hence they are going to be disciplined. So you are not going to get any favor from them to tell you that they have a whatever huge case load. But the other thing that I'm certain that we are well aware of, and I'm saying that with the reality that it may have to be factually amplified, is the fact that you're sitting with a legal aid SA that has currently 90% of its staff instead of 95% of its staff composition. That's one. And when we're dealing with 95, you would accept that if we're not at 100%, we obviously will have caseload that is not commensurate with the number of staff members that we should have. We are a super law firm in the country. It's a fact. Because of the nature of the clientele we have to serve, that clientele is the poor. They are more than 40% of South Africans falls in the bracket of people that may at one point in their lives seek assistance from legal aid South Africa. So you are not going to have a caseload that is commensurate with the number of staff that you are going to have. And for you, I think a member, Breitenbach, put it much more better than I could put it, to say you are going to sit with people who need quality of service that we must give, that we cannot give an excuse. A lawyer in court representing an accused must make sure that the rights of that accused are never compromised, and that trial is done the right way. But when you are dealing with 70 people that need legal aid in a particular rural court somewhere, as Mr. Ngola says, and we are sitting with two practitioners, and the court role has to be dealt with on the basis of the fact of the court hours that are available, it's a reality that you are going to have those nibbling problems that Ms. Breitenbach is talking about. But let me not go further on that point. We can definitely discuss it. But let me ask the three officials, to deal with those issues that Chair has actually referred to as managerial issues that can be clarified here. And for the rest of the things, ask your permission that we should be able to come back to deal with. Lastly, Chair, with your permission, we're not blaming the media for anything. Fact of the matter is that ENCA program was managed in order to project what the intended station intended to project. If you accept that Patrick had more than 2 hours interview with them and gave them all the other realities of the policies that we deal with, and they go and extract Patrick where he's answering on things that are not even policy related at that point. And somebody asks a question like, could we have prevented the behavior of these people? And then I think Patrick says, if I had a system that could foresee human behavior, I probably would solve the problems of the world. it says to you that people are going to extract that which they want to carry as a narrative, Mr. Ngola, going forward. And they are not going to tell you of the work that this committee knows legal aid to be doing and the nature and context and content of policies that we have come up with in order to achieve the very good that Legal Aid South Africa was established for. So in that respect, there may be things that you may have seen there that may not necessarily be factually that which happens even in courts where people are interested in the outcomes. With that said, Chair, can I ask that the CEO then answer those particular issues that can be dealt with here, and for the rest, the 37, 38 questions that I have noted, we will be able to revert to you on them as soon as you would have been available to interact with us in the future. Thanks, Chair. With that, can I ask the CEO and the two senior executives to then answer the others?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mavondla.
Honorable Chair, thank you
sorry, so much. Sorry, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you for the Deputy Chair for addressing the question by Honorable Ngola regarding to Legal Aid's response to the program. And I must also emphasize that we welcome any client feedback, as that's a basis for any continuous improvements in our processes and also in our system enhancement. And our approach in dealing with this ENCA program has always been that we welcome, we are amenable to receive client feedback, and we'll deal with the issues raised in the program adequately, and we will strive to be transparent as we have done in this presentation. And I must also reiterate that we accorded the program a detailed interview by our chief legal executive. But unfortunately, all programs and procedures and systems that we are sharing with the committee now that were shared in that detailed interview were not aired. But all is not lost. We have taken the lessons based on what was shared in the program. And with regard to matters turnaround times, in the client's experiences relate, it is evident that the client, the other party, and other role players' conduct was not taken into account when the experience was relayed. And I just want the committee also to note that the program portrayed a particular narrative, which we welcome if it highlights the gaps in our service delivery, but it is evident as well from the program that other role players' conduct and the client's own conduct was not taken into account, and systemic issues governing the justice system were not taken into account. With regard to May Newvault's question regarding the legal practitioner screening, I think we are proud of the more than 2,000 legal practitioners that do their best in the face of challenging circumstances and caseloads as expanded by other members. And we carefully screen whom we bring on board, and most of the legal practitioners have been with us for a long time, and like I said, they're doing their best. The legal quality assurance assessments that are done are unfortunately done on closed files, and a take home from this program is that we should extend that legal quality assurance component also to pending files above the controls that we have on the files, so that we can monitor all the quality attributes that relates to pending file verification and also monitoring the turnaround times and also monitoring the meta activity reports. And as we were in investigating these matters, it also came to our attention that some practitioners were forging these meta activity reports that are reported on our online system. The other menu, Honorable Newart also asked about the resignations, which I think the chair did touch on, but that as a matter of policy, we do conduct exit interviews. And with regard to the cold drink money, Honorable Nola, the reason we included, provided we receive proof, is that in the program, the client said that they have paid e-wallet to the legal practitioner. So it was our understanding that if it was an e-wallet, we would be able to trace it. I will then ask my colleagues to touch on the caseloads. And before they do, I just also want to highlight that in the wake of the impending budget cuts in the new financial year starting in April, we are to shed from our already constrained budget 182 million, of which 100 million should be on cost of employment, meaning that we still have to rationalize the limited resources that we have in order to meet the allocation that was apportioned to us in November. So in essence, we will come back to the committee with the board, and the board will then at the right time engage the committee on the constraints that that budget cut will have on the caseloads and also on the overall court coverage. Thank you. And with regard to customer services, Honorable Newart also asked us if we don't have client feedback forms. We used to have them, and it became evident that those, the integrity of that was questionable, as some of the staff members would feel them. And as a result, subsequently, we're using our call center, because we have a 12-hour call center. We have an outbound facility whereby the call center agents will phone customers that are randomly picked by the system to do a customer satisfaction survey. Thank you. I will then ask my colleague Patrick and Brian and the COO to touch on the what we're doing around digitization with the limited budget that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Okay. I won't go and deal then with the issue of what we shared with the program itself. I think that's been adequately dealt with by the deputy chairperson and the CEO. I think from a legal aid perspective, I think let's put it to this way. We have, since 2004 when we digitized, had the capability to have electronic files. Your difficulty though, both within the criminal justice system and the civil justice system, is most of that is still paper-based. Apart from your big dockets that in your bigger matters that will be available electronically, most of it is paper-based. So when you're looking, and we did start to with a program then to scan and index that to the matter file, but that's very resource intensive. And we would have had to have had substantially more resources from a support capacity perspective to support that process of then digitizing what you have that comes in paper form. The additional difficulty is even scanning and indexing handwritten statements from police dockets and the legibility thereof and the quality thereof. So those are the kinds of things that I think in the overall system needs to be addressed. I can say that I also sit on the rules board, and we have delivered to the deputy minister and the minister e-rules on looking at how we can, for the overall system, specifically from a civil perspective, now move into an electronic era. But that's going to be very much reliant on the systems that are developed by the Office of the Chief Justice, which one has been piloted in Gauteng, and then obviously the Department of Justice in terms of how to manage cases that you can do it electronically. I think so. It's an overall system approach, and I think it's important that we do go there, but it's difficult for one role player to say we're going digital and manage the paper and have the capacity then to take all that paper, convert it electronically, and link it to the file for that practitioner. Your other side of the things is also emails coming in, and we already do serve documents and process via email. But you've got to make sure then that that practitioner is disciplined enough to go and take that and link it to the file so that it remains within the file. Now it's easier to really print it. Our systems are being developed so that we are integrating our document generation system, and it forms part. Now we'd go into our phase 3 in terms of how we generate documents, because we've got a specific system that helps us at the moment. So we've got standard particulars of claim in a divorce matter, for example, or in eviction matters, where it brings up all the standard documents you have. The concept is data in once, and you never have to recapture that data. But that now has to be integrated into our own system so that whenever you've put data in, it puts it back into the system so that you can reuse it further down the line. So that any document I need, let's say the client's name is already captured on the application for legal aid. If I've got the client's name in there, any document I need to fill for the client, I wouldn't have to type that name again, because the system should pull it automatically and place it within the document. And so that's the concept and the design of around our civil system and our how we will be moving it. We're busy with quite a request for proposals on the integration between legal knowledge, legal precedence, and our document generation system, and that integration within our own systems, but within available budget. So the technology is there. We have the capabilities. We have the document management system. But if you're going to do it in isolation from the rest of the system, both criminal and civil, we're going to need substantial more capacity. So once your dockets become electronic, we're already linked to SAPS via that system, and we're testing that into our system where it will alert us upfront about someone that needs our assistance. So, you know, those systems have been developed, but you need to then get to a stage that the dockets also become electronic, that you don't, and you can pass it, and then it links it automatically through a single reference throughout the system to the relevant practitioner that needs, and that case reference for the client. So I think that's there, and we've always looked at it, and we're always looking at ways that we can be more sustainable in the way we render services and to utilize these systems and the concepts of data in once throughout. So those are in development. We're at various stages of it. And I think to assure the committee, you know, as I've said, from 2004 already, we were capable to have that, and we've got the document management systems for those things. But capacity in terms of numbers. So I think just to deal with the paper base, if I follow up, I think the CEO has dealt with the matter activity. So any practitioner, whether criminal or civil, we've got set what we call matter activities that they must complete on a daily basis to tell us which matters they worked on, what kind of work did they do. Did they go to court? Did they consult? Did they draft pleadings? Did they report to client? And we, that goes into our system. So we're able to say, and what time they took to do that, because that enables us now, as we're developing our systems, to more closely now monitor the hours work each practitioner is doing, the kind of work that they're doing. Unfortunately, we have had both, and I've had the unfortunate task of having to discipline staff, both admin and legal on the civil side, for when our matter, we've got a report that says any matter that hasn't been worked on for 60 days, you need to explain it and it gets investigated. So sometimes to get it off their desk, they would say they did some work in the file when they didn't do it. So, and then that's what they put in. But we pick that up on our audits, which our provincial offices have. We take the necessary disciplinary action where that's happened. And I've taken the attitude that the trust relationship is irretrievably broken down by such actions, and we can't trust you to honestly tell us what you have or haven't done in our file. I think that's what comes from our perspective. I think the client, CEO has dealt with client satisfaction. Regulation 13.2, there is a slight amelioration. So when we said 13.2, I was in the particular circumstances referring to it. We do allow for assistance to be granted where if there's been a substantial delay for more than 12 months due to a failure of the system or abuse of the system by the other party, to give you legal...
Mr. Andemeka, I think you are venturing into a space that is the board space.
Sure. But that's the current policy, Chair, as it stands.
Yes. No, the question was whether the current policy is just.
Sure.
Which needs to be re-looked at. If it is, if the board thinks that it is just, then it will have to justify that. So we do not want you to restate the policy. So that one, I think the board will have to deal with it.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the question about the please call me, I went into the section of Get Help, and down at the bottom, it does give our SMS number where you can send a please call me to. But also, we have on our web inquiry, there is a question there now that says, if you are if you have difficulties from a hearing perspective and therefore need assistance, you're able to send a web inquiry and tick that. And we've got a specific question there where we ask that on the web inquiry to facilitate that. I'm happy to share that. And I think, Chair, those are the kinds of things we can share with the committee so that you can actually see where it is. But maybe more prominent, I think, on our webpage as to where you can get it. And I think the easy access on the webpage and the navigation is maybe, you know, something we can look at. I think what we need to also say is the caseload currently our pending is about 57,000. Understanding it at the moment, the way we set up the targets, and they are on the slides as to what we've set, and we've set it in terms of, you know, there's not many other standards out there of it, and we've looked at what would be reasonable. Most attorneys will tell you a practice of 250 files will never sustain your practice. So that is the reality. But if you look at the percentage of our practitioners, and we've broken it up as to within the range of what they have and the number of files they have. But the reality is we're sitting at 46,000 capacity currently. We anticipate with the budget cuts, it's going to drop to 40,000. And I think that's the reality. And we're going to have to manage that change because at the moment we're not filling vacancies while we're having to deal with the issue because you don't want to impact on people's lives when you bring them in now, but because of the cuts, you don't have the money for those positions. And therefore, we've very carefully managed it to transition. And that's been happening over the last 4 years, 5 years. And that's the difficulty of managing through the issues of budget cuts and how to deal with it and dealing with the capacity issues. On the question of Afrikaans, that's why we've changed the one practitioner now to be able to deal with the issue of Afrikaans. But when you've got a very small capacity on the civil side, it's very difficult within three people to cover all 11 official languages. And you can do it via this, but then you need the technology at court and it's a bit difficult. But we've allocated a practitioner now that is able to communicate in Afrikaans. But also there, the difficulties you have is the understanding and saying, well, they told me it can't be done. Now, we've got to understand the difficulties that happen within the terrain of government subsidy houses and the fact that both parties qualify for the subsidy and therefore to get forfeiture. It's very difficult on that kind of house to prove that the one party contributed more than the other because both of them got the government subsidy and both qualified, and therefore it's very difficult to go and show that. And that's the difficulty where the main asset for poor people is the government subsidy house. And how do we deal with that is a big issue for government to consider as to how do we deal with it. If it goes to someone that gets the children, well, we're going to have more fights about who gets the children and gets custody of children. And I think those are some of the difficulties, and the understanding of the nuances of the law contributes to the misunderstandings and the difficulties we face in dealing with client expectations or what we should do. I think in terms of saying the issue of blaming the media and things like that, I think what we're saying is the full story of what happened doesn't always come through because it doesn't deal with the, and suits the narrative. And I think that's something we've got to be conscious of. Not to say that we're not taking these issues seriously. As you will see, I've personally been involved in investigating all four, ensuring how we addressed it, how we consult with them, reporting back in writing. And I think from a management perspective, this is for us is not what we want. And we're looking at where the gaps are. I think the CEO dealt with the issue of the proof linking to the payment of the monies for the cool drink monies. Now, the difficulty here is, of course, is there's two participants. There's the person that paid the money and there's the person that received the money. So we report to the police. They investigate that. One person's not, it's not going to be an only one person crime. And that's also got to be understood. But therefore, if you've got the proof, though, it's easier to prove it. But we've advised the client to go and seek independent advice relating to that issue before she does anything relating to that. The one where we ask for proof of payment links to the expert report because we need to refund it. And that's quite simply the case. She shouldn't have been asked to pay for the report. We have the budget. The processes are there. The supplier, in fact, was registered on the Central Supplier Database of National Treasury. So there's no reason why not we shouldn't have dealt with it and obtained the report. Sorry, Chair, I'm just looking at my notes to see that I cover all the issues. I think we might look at also responding in writing, that it also makes it easier if we've missed anything then to cover it. I think, yes, do we monitor? Yes. We do monitor the cases. I think it is a clear issue of why did this matter take so long. There was sufficient as to the gaps, and then how do we address it? I think, Chair, I hope that I've dealt with that aspect. I don't see if there's anything else you would like me to deal with, but then Brian can maybe come in more on the criminal side and deal with that, those issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Brian. I'm audible.
Yes, you are. But
thanks,
focus only on managerial issues. Don't stray into dealing with issues that the board still has to deliberate on. Just focus on issues that are within your control.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In fact, I think my colleagues have answered most of the issues amongst themselves. I just want to pick up on maybe one or two issues. Which would be managerial issues. Many of the members have raised the issue of the loss of files, and I thought it important to share with the committee some of our records on this. I can assure the committee that it's more the exception rather than a common practice that files go missing. In the normal course of monitoring and supervising work, our legal managers are continuously on a daily basis examining practitioner files as part of their monitoring and support program. But I can also say that on a quarterly basis, we have what is called a pending file verification process that is controlled from our offices at National Office, where every file that is pending has to be verified by the manager in sitting with the practitioner. And this is a physical file pending verification. And I can confirm that at the moment we're doing it now as part of our Q4 one. But the last one we did, which was about 3-4 months ago, we reviewed 177,000 files and we identified 13 files that was physically not present. So that just gives you an extent that the numbers of files that do go missing is few and far in between. And where we identify the files at the offices, then they are, the management is required to look at reasons why the file went missing and is there a breakdown of some controls. So I can assure the committee that it is not something that is quite common. I think the issues around the electronic recording of files, Patrick did cover that quite clearly. But I just want to expand on the one issue of the matter activity reports. You may have heard both the CEO and Patrick speak about it. But at a point in time, in any matter that we have done or we are currently doing, we have access to know exactly what work was done on a matter by a practitioner from the time we took on a matter. It's simply by putting the reference number of the matter, the system generates every attendance on a file in that matter. But it does depend on each practitioner recording detailed activities that they work on the file. And that is something that on an ongoing basis, we try to ensure adherence and completeness of that recording. And the one last aspect, and the CEO has covered the screening of practitioners, but I thought I should just also add to say that when we recruit for practitioners, we have different categories of practitioners. So in criminal courts, for instance, we have district court practitioners, regional court practitioners, high court practitioners. So the competencies and skills for each court type is different, and these are clearly spelled out in recruitment and recruitment processes, which leads to shortlisting and appointment. But a key requirement would be experience in that court type. For instance, if you're in district court, we would employ, for instance, newly qualified practitioners. But certainly, if you're going to go in the regional court and the high court, then our experience requirements in those courts are much higher. And therefore, you'd find that most of our practitioners, 95% or more, do meet our quality standards. In fact, we are quite happy with the quality standards that they reach, and this is verified also independently by our quality assurance unit. So thank you, Chair. I think we will go and review all the other issues raised by members, and where necessary, we will have to put it in writing. But I think we have covered most of the issues. I'm happy to also consider any other questions by the members. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much to the Legal Aid Board. Thank you for the engagement. I won't do closing remarks on this matter because the matter is still not yet done. We are still awaiting the board's input on the matter. So we will, once the board has met, I think in the second quarter, we will schedule a meeting where we will receive a comprehensive briefing from the board through the chairperson and the deputy chairperson, and then we will interact with you going forward. But thank you very much for the way in which you have prepared. I think the report was very comprehensive. It has also given us your side of the story. But we do understand that your side of the story is not complete until the board has gone through everything that has been raised. And so this is a continuous interaction that is not ending today on this matter. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Deputy Chair and Chief.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and we are grateful that we have had this interaction. Indeed, as all of us said, we will go back and deal with this thing. Some of them, of the issues raised, are indeed giving us an opportunity to go relook into our policies and be able to deal with all these other issues that are raised. And for that, we will be able to come back at your convenience as soon as you would have called us. I can assure the committee that the board is meeting next week. We're starting with committees, and out of those committees, they will culminate into a board meeting on the 27th rather. And these meetings are this month. And in our understanding, we definitely will be able to deal with these issues and come back to the committee. We take every issue that the committee raises as serious. We take every allegation in the public as serious. We deal with it within our systems. And when the need arises, we definitely will consider urgent meetings that the committee feels we should actually explore instead of waiting for scheduled meetings. and we take every other effort that the committee makes to guide us in our processing of our systems as a necessary interaction that will help us all in the quest to provide quality legal services to members of the public. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Deputy Chair. I see Honorable Nigel's hand.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I did type on the chat group about that slide 22 is not clear. So if it's possible, slide 29, interpreter's mistake. So if the management could look on the chat group where I've mentioned my challenge with slide 29, if they can give a response to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think Honorable Nibot, let us check the chat if it is within the board's competence or within the... Okay, I think either when the board comes back, if they do not, then they will respond in writing.
Hey, just with your permission, I understand member Nivot to that extent. We will come back to that. You would recall also that there's a member that has raised issues about the numbers there to say that probably we may not have captured the numbers as when she read them. I think it's Mufukeng, if I'm not wrong. So I think those are the typos and nibbling issues that may have been picked up by committee members. And obviously, this matter is still going to the board. The board is going to be able to deal with those kind of things in the slides and be able to cleanse them, because the agency with which the report may have been developed would definitely may have led to some of the minor things that may not have been picked up. So I think all the other things that members would have raised would be attended to by the time we come back to you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Deputy Chair, and thanks to the Legal Aid Board. You are now excused. You can also do your other work. And as members of the Legal Aid Board, I think you are done with what was supposed to have been done today with us. So thank you very much. You are excused.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members.
Thank you. Honorable members, we have two items that are pending. We have the issue of the committee correspondence. Honorable members will recall that we have asked the committee secretariat to circulate the letters of complaints against the SIU head from one of the executive members of the SIU. I have spoken to the minister because mainly those, in fact, according to the allegations, the letters were written to the minister. And based on our previous decision, I had an interaction with the minister. The minister has assured me that they have appointed a panel of two DGs and a lawyer, I think, to investigate all the allegations that have been leveled against the advocate in TV. I think what we might want to do is to have timelines so that we don't give people endless time, because there will be an expectation even from the person who wrote to us that he receives a response that within a particular time these matters would have been ventilated and properly investigated. So the minister has promised that he has already appointed the panel. The because he indicated that one of the challenges that they were faced with was that it's not clear as to who is the employer, whether it is whether the SIU for the head of the SIU, the employer is the president or the Department of Justice. So these are some of the issues that they are trying to clarify themselves with. But that is the action I have taken since this have come to the attention before they are discussed by the committee. And that is the correspondence in as far as the allegations against the SIU are concerned. And honorable members, honorable Sort.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to just unmute or leave my video on because of connection issues. So thank you for that feedback. I think there are a number of issues raised, and obviously the allegations appear to be very important, but in all issues there's always two sides to a story. And so I just wanted to ask as a matter of clarity what the nature of the inquiry is. You might not be able to give that detail, but my concern would be if there's two DGs appointed, do they have the time to attend to this as a matter of urgency? That's the first issue. And I think you raised an important issue as to who is the employer, but it would appear that the complaints are directed against Advocate Matiba. Whether the substance to it, that is what this inquiry will ascertain. I think we also need clarity from the minister. What is the nature of this inquiry? Because my understanding is, if one reads the SIU Act, the president appoints the head of the directorate, of the SIU. So one would have thought that possibly the president should have considered an inquiry, given the fact that all the complaints are directed against the head of the unit who is appointed by the president. But I will be guided by the committee's thoughts in this regard. Obviously, there's a lot of issues raised here. My other concern is the issue of disciplinary action now against the complainant, and that, again, rightfully, wrongfully, whether there is substance to that disciplinary action now taken against him, but it does raise alarm bells, given the fact that he has raised a number of complaints which need investigation, but now it appears that there's disciplinary action being taken against him as well. So these are some of the issues we need to grapple with. I appreciate we have an oversight function that the executive needs to look into these matters, but just these are just some of my general comments without expressing any views on the merits at all of the substance of the allegation. They do appear to be very serious. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Horn.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I want to agree with the Honorable Swart. I think we should determine as a portfolio committee whether dealing with the matter could be brought home purely under our role and responsibility of oversight. And if it is something more ultimately, then of course we should be very, very careful not to overreach. My initial view would be that we can engage with the matter as part of our oversight duties. But then if we conclude that it is something that calls for more, then we are merely duty bound to report to the executive, and specifically the president who appoints the head of the special investigative unit, and draw the attention of the executive to matters that may call for a more formal investigation that may end possibly in disciplinary steps. So that's my view as to how we should approach it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Horn. Honorable Mufuke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. I was thinking that maybe the process of the minister with the team that has been appointed can be the one that is actually taking us somewhere, because the report will come back to the portfolio committee. Then that's where we'll actually look forward to see what are we saying to advise so that it can go back to the president. That is something that, because there are so many things there, and this complainant has been almost to everyone. You can see that the letters have been to even yourself, president, and all other agencies. So let us give the minister the opportunity to get the team, and then so that we can be able to get the report back and we can deliberate from there. That is my suggestion.
Thank you, Honorable Mpukeng. Any other hand? Honorable Jana?
No, let me speak fast because maybe it will just take me out again. I only have one question. I agree with my colleagues, but only one question that I have. Remember there was an allegation before this allegation, and we did not take this route that we are taking now. It just ended up, I don't know, somewhere. But my question is that, are we not going to be blamed one day by those women who were complaining, who laid a complaint, and we never entertained it until the last issue, the last point, and now we are taking this serious? Are we not going to be maybe accused that we choose cases? Can't we clap all these cases and say also, if they, as we refer this case, Minister, also look into this one that came to our attention before? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me start with the last point. Honorable Horn, are you raising your hand or you forgot to lower your hand?
No, as they say, it's an old hand. My apologies, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Let me start with the last point that was raised by Honorable Jelly. It's not true that we did not take an action. We did. In fact, what we said was that the minister needs to do an investigation and report to the committee last year, February, of which he did. The minister responded that the matter is before the Labour Court, and until the matter is concluded there, he can't act until the matter is concluded in the Labour Court. And as far as we know, the matter has not yet been concluded by the Labour Court. That is, so there was an action from our side as the committee. It was referred to the minister to investigate. And then the minister further advised the committee that no, he can't act because the matter is in the Labour Court. And that is where the matter is now. So we did take an action as the committee. This matter was reported to the minister last year, as the correspondence would clarify. Already there is a process, but there are important questions that have been raised. And for instance, by Honorable Swart, what is the extent of the investigation? What are the terms of references? Maybe the minister can clarify us then, and also to get a clarity. In as far as the enabling legislation on the SIU is concerned, as to who must, because it's quite clear from what Honorable Swart is saying, it's the executive that must do the investigation, but it's not clear whether it is the minister or the president that must do the investigation. Then once the investigation has been done, concluded, then Parliament will be briefed as to what the outcome of the investigation was. Because it's quite clear, the issue raised by Honorable Swart, I think even Honorable Horn, about overreach is quite a serious issue that we should not do. We have to respond to letters that come to us as members of parliament, but some of them, they do not necessarily mean that it's us who must take the action, but we must ensure that people who are supposed to take action, whatever action that they are supposed to take, do take those particular actions. So I think in this case, the minister will clarify us the terms of reference of the nature of the inquiry, and whether legally it is within his competence or the president's competence, and then the time frames, I think, will be much more clearer after we have interacted with the minister, after he has explained those issues. Then we can be able to, if we have to correspond with the president and decide to delegate that function to the minister, then we still get a report from the minister as to how far did the investigation go. Usually, honorable members, when it is a head of department or a DG, it, because there is nobody higher than those DG except politicians. So usually a panel consists of DGs and sometimes public service commission with an assistance of a legal qualified person. But I do think that we should take the counsel by the committee that the minister firstly needs to explain the issue that we are not clear of, the issues of powers, and then the issue of the nature of inquiry. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and I appreciate your summary. I checked on the Act, and it's Section 3.4 sub D, which obviously we know allows the minister, the president, to remove the head of the SIU from office on sound reasons for doing so. So that would be the advice that you'd be getting. I'm just putting in the legal framework, whether the president or the minister, if the minister does it, can the president still respond to such an inquiry? And I'm just mindful of previous inquiries that we had, such as the Jinwala inquiry into the fitness of the NDPP at that stage, that if I remember correctly, that was a presidential appointment. But I leave it in your hands to get that clarity. I would agree with you that this is an executive function. We do exercise oversight to the degree of the expeditiousness of the completeness, how quickly that report will be done. And thank you for the information about the Director General. I appreciate that as well. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I think I would take all what the members have raised, which has been very helpful, to inquire further from the minister and maybe the presidency, and so that the legal framework must be very clear. We can't act and just use logic and act outside of a legal framework, because that would make the process to be very vulnerable to challenges. So we must be clear about the legal framework. Then I will interact with the minister, possibly with the presidency, and then I will come back to the committee with the feedback. Thank you very much, honorable members. The last item on the agenda is the consideration of a draft report on the recognition of customary marriages amendment bill. Committee Secretary, can you apply to the report? Thank you very much. Honorable members, is the report of Portfolio Nation of Democrats, 12 February 2021. The Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, having considered the recognition of customary marriages amendment B12 of 2019, the Assembly for concurrence agrees with the amendment bill. Is there any mover for the adoption of the report? Honorable Swart.
I move to accept, Chair.
Thank you. Is there any seconder?
I second, Chair.
Seconded. Honorable Yoli Soyako.
Chairperson, you know I'm quite new in the committee. I would just like to understand the customary marriages bill, does it speak about the involvement of traditional leaders in any way?
No, that is, we're dealing with two bills, Honorable Yako.
Mm-hmm.
You say, is this customary marriages and the other one is a traditional court bill.
Oh, okay.
That is the one Honorable Ndlozi had strong views on.
Okay.
The recognition of customary marriages, but this is a different one.
Okay. I think I will reserve my comment to take it back to the caucus for us to decide whether we agree or we don't agree.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako. So I take it there is no objection. The report is agreed to. Honorable members, thank you very much for the fruitful engagements for today and the guidance that you gave the chair. And I will undertake to do the task that you have given me to interact with the minister to clarify the legal framework and possibly with the presidency. Then I will give the report to the committee. Maybe next week when we meet. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Honorable Swart, is that a new hand or an old hand?
Old hand. Thank
old
you.
Hand, okay.
I don't know, I didn't raise it. I don't know why. Thank you, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Yako is also an old hand. Honorable Yako?
Sorry, Chair, it's an old hand. I'll take it down now.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much. Honorable members, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Good weekend.
Good weekend to everybody.
Bye.